The town land of Clonairy, born by Belturbet, County Cavan.
And I'm here
in the parish of Templeport.
In the parish of Templeport, and I'm in a community centre, and I'm talking to people. I suppose you all live around here in this area. So, Oliver Brady, if I could talk to you first.
Yeah, well, I live next door to the hall here, and I would have lived here for the last 60 years. Anything in particular you want?
Yes, if you lived here for the last 60 years, you must have experienced the troubles and the difficulties.
I would have had to considerable degree, and I certainly know what life was like in the north. I suppose the one it was always there, but the one legacy that still seems to be there is something that I detest, is sectarianism. It's there. I don't know how everyone get it out. It's a peculiar thing. I would know people who would be a completely different background to me. Worked with them, friends with them, some of them very friendly with, but particularly people who belong to the Orange Order, and yet the whole philosophy of the Orange Order is, it belongs to the 16th century, not to the 20th. It's particularly anti-Catholic, but these people don't appear to be, and they're always quite friendly, and they do the anything for you. It's this anomaly. I would believe that a lot of them are in the outfit because it's a social outfit, they can mix, they can have their day out. I have no big issue with the 12th of July or walks on and that. Now, I am from a Republican background, and I would have been involved in the Republican movement to a certain degree, and I would have known it would have died in the previous bust-up in the 1950s. But we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go, and I think that exercises like this do help to maybe
to heal.
I don't believe that anybody. I don't believe that we think of the other side, but the other side are our neighbours. They're from the same economic background from us.
Yeah,
it may go to a different church, but.
So, Oliver, whereabouts did you live during the troubles?
Then? I lived here, but I would have been just next door.
Yeah. And so
ironically enough, how I came to be here. I lost an uncle in the 1950s campaign, and when he died, my mother moved in there. And that's how I came to be there.
Was your father?
No, my uncle, yeah.
And what was his name?
James Crossan.
And was he shot and killed?
Yeah, at the border, yeah, in Fermanagh, yeah, at Mullan.
And was that the 50s?
58, yeah.
And is that why you took up arms then?
Well, I didn't take up arms. I'm not saying I took up arms, but I certainly could understand those who did.
Really? Yeah. And you obviously supported strongly about it.
Oh, yeah, I would. I'm kind of understanding what I can see, but I certainly know. I know who the movers and shakers were, and I don't know if that's relevant in this conversation, but when he made contact with Cavan County Council before, I did ask a few people, would they be prepared to talk? But in view of the Boston Tapes controversy, they were very reticent. No, they wouldn't. Remember that business with the...
I do, of course, yeah.
That would have...
I'll take that from you.
Yeah, it's ticking a bit, is it?
It is,
So that's basically where I come from. That's
okay, well, I'll come back to you again. And John... John how do I pronounce your second?
Fair.
Yeah, John Fair. Could you tell me your story then?
Well, I come from Killeshandra, and I was a priest in various parts of the diocese, and my first one was appointment was in Milltown, and I suppose the thing at that time that sort of stood out around there, it went there in 76 and 73, wasn't it, that Geraldine Riley and the young lad were blown up in Beltorbit, and that the bridge in Ahalane closed, which was in the corner of the parish, that had been blown up as well. And so that part of the country, there had been a great connection between, let's say, Timor and Derry Lane and Beltorbit. In fact, in the old days, Beltorbit was the coastal district for. They couldn't, they no longer were, had ease of access to one another. That was one thing. I went to England then after that in 79. I went in September 79, and I think it was the week after Lord Mountbatten was blown up. And I remember the kind of animosity there was for the Irish at that time, you know, going over there. You weren't very welcome.
Okay.
And especially if you're coming over just straight away, you know.
Yeah.
And so, where did I go after that? I came to Leitrim after that, and I was a little bit further away from events, I suppose.
Were you attending to people who were victims of the violence?
Not really, no.
You didn't see the O'Reilly family at any stage when you were there?
They were. Her mother was the sacristan in the church. But, I mean, they spoke about it, certainly.
Did they speak to you?
I didn't counsel them about it or anything like that, but we talked about it, you know, just generally. And yeah, like her mother never got over, her father, neither of them ever got over it. Really.
People would say that there was no such thing as counselling, or they didn't understand post-traumatic stress. And so,
yeah, but your people counsel by talking. That's really what counselling is. It's talking, giving people a chance to express their feelings and their.
But John, in your position, because you were a priest, did they want to come and talk to you?
No, not particularly. No.
And did they keep it bottled up inside?
Let's say with the Rileys, they talked freely about it. You know them? You
I
know
didn't.
Them? They did talk.
Well, I know
talk freely
them,
about
just,
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Passing.
Yeah. Okay. Bridget, can I go on and talk to you now? You're Bridget O'Reilly.
Bridget O'Reilly.
O'Reilly. Yeah. And so, were you anything to those O'Reillys?
Oh, no connection, no. But I came to live in Ballyconnell in the 1950s. And at that time, we were in business in Ballyconnell. And great up and down, across the border trade all the time, you know. And then later on then, of course, when the troubles really got going then, it affected trade, of course, a good bit.
Yeah.
And it also, it didn't really make much difference to us, but it meant we were a bit nervous about going across the border. And they were stopped, and you were questioned, and everything like that, you know. But otherwise, it didn't affect us very much. No.
Okay, so you didn't see yourself as a victim of the violence then, really?
Not really, no. But of course, I felt for all the people who were victims, you know. But I, no, personally, no, we weren't, you know.
Yeah, and did you see your business wasn't threatened at any stage, or?
I suppose it did drop off a little bit during the bad troubles, because people didn't like coming across the border, you know. So it probably did do the farm trade all right, you know.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it didn't affect us very much, no. But in Ballyconnell, I suppose people were a bit nervous and a bit uncertain, I don't know.
There were bombs up here that went off too, wasn't there? Or did you find?
Swan and Barn, Ballinamore, wasn't there? Kidnapped in Ballinamore.
Yeah.
But that was the nearest kind of troubles we had here.
And Margaret, have you? Did you grow up locally here as well?
No. I married and lived in Carrigaleese, which is at the checkpoint, Swadlin, Derlin.
Oh, you're right on the border, so.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, you would have seen it from both sides.
Yeah, but we had no trouble. The army was at the end of the road and had the barriers which had to be lifted when you'd be coming in and out of our home. We had a private house there, one daughter.
How did you survive, like, although 30 years of security at your gate?
It didn't bother us, really. We got along all right with them. The army, they never bothered us, really.
Yeah.
They had a big checkpoint or... What would you say?
Shade.
Yeah, where they'd open the barrier when you could see you coming out. We never had any discussions with them or anything.
Okay, or were there people coming up?
There were other people that lived in that way as well, and they had no trouble. the English boys were always okay.
Were they?
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but living on the border there, did you find though that there was a certain amount of threat because I mean the roads were closed and
yeah,
you know.
We didn't find it hard really. We're so used to it, you know. In the end,
did it become a way of life then? Do you know
that for so many years? I don't know, many years now. Mm-hmm. And deceased, been down there, and we never had any problems with them. So friendly and nice to say good evening. And
did you make sandwiches and tea for
no,
them?
No, but they were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were nice people.
Well, that's one of the really good stories now, because all the stories I've heard would be totally different. And the very fact that roads were closed off, did that...
This was a by road now, after the main road. And they were
was it?
Yes, yeah.
Your husband was a farmer, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And so...
No problems.
But I'm sure your cattle were grazing on both sides of the border, were they?
No, we were in the north. We were in the northern part.
Well, and did you see yourselves then as northerners? You know, obviously, because you were in the north side.
We were Carrigalese down then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we had a business in town.
And
we had to come back and forth in Ballyconnell. We had to come back and forth in the morning, evenings, and so on.
Yeah. Well, that's... I'll come back to you again, because it is interesting, but Kieran McGuire, when you say nationalism and republicanism, do you see a difference?
I do, yeah.
And what is it?
The violence. Violence would be the difference. Nationalists wouldn't necessarily be violent, whereas republicans, well, would be, I suppose.
And so did you see yourself as a nationalist then?
I would, yeah.
And that's interesting. Oliver, did you see yourself as a Republican?
Yes, I would believe in Republicanism. Yeah. Definitely, the whole tenet of it from... Republicanism was long history, Gavin. It goes back to 1798. And I certainly adhere to the...
Yeah.
Tone, Connell, Pierce. I certainly would adhere to the beliefs. Now, funny enough, when Miss McKenna spoke of the checkpoints... I always find the soldiers polite, nice. I wouldn't regard them as enemies. I always realise I do the job. I would find that certain regiments, Scottish regiments, paratroopers, say it depended on the regiment. The average guy from the north of England or Cockney, they were civil enough, sociable enough.
I see.
The UDR and the UDR are different kettle of fish, and they were Irish. I regard them as Irish, I am, but they were certainly different.
So it was like a civil war in that sense.
It was certainly. I'd be loath to go so far as to say it was outright civil war, but it was certainly. Well, I suppose a neighbour fight. Each other, you could, I suppose, if you want to call it for simplicity, you could call it civil war.
Yeah.
But I would certainly have found a marked difference in the attitudes of English and Welsh soldiers. There was a Welsh regiment on the border at one stage, but as Scottish soldiers seemed to have a different attitude. Paratroopers, well, they, I suppose, they were trained to be tough and they behaved tough.
Yeah.
I suppose they were at the old guard, the sergeants. We used to speak about years ago, they were very fair, they treated everybody with equal contempt. That's what I found about them.
But I suppose people would be Margaret first. Would you agree with what he's saying or what Oliver is saying?
I can't hear too clearly.
About the Scottish soldiers being much more truculent and difficult with the people than the English or the Welsh ones on the border.
No, not really. I was working every day in the shop and I didn't know really what was going on.
They had that name. You'd see they had a yoke in their cap, hadn't they?
Well, they were different. They had different accents. I would be interested in accents for a start and linguistics for a start anyway. So I always had, even amongst Irish people, I have an interest in just accents for some reason, I don't know. I can't sing, so maybe I have to go for that one. But I always found particularly guys in the north of England. Well, like myself, I couldn't see in different circumstances getting on the best of them, you know. I never found them particularly offensive, but I certainly found Scots, it was more nuanced. Paratroopers were just tough, and they were just, I'd say they're just picking you for the sake of picking on you.
Right.
Aggressive. It was, they would be hated if they had soldiers. They'd be claimed aggressive, and everybody was the enemy as far as they were concerned, and they surely were good at making enemies. They didn't seem to, they were totally different mindset to.
But say Bridgie O'Reilly here, she had a business in the town, and I mean, she had to. You had to survive and work in that business.
Yes, indeed, yes.
And so did you have to keep your head down and kind of do nothing?
No, we didn't. I don't remember anything like that. No. All I remember is we didn't like having to cross the border with the B specials. They kind of, you know, gave us a bit of aggravation, all right. But otherwise, no, we didn't. Didn't have to keep our heads down or anything, you know.
Yeah. And Margaret, are you are you Church of Ireland, or are you Catholic as well?
Yes.
So, but being Catholics, then do you think that being a Protestant is kind of was the other side? You know, did you see them as?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
you would. Yes, we had a few neighbours.
And why? Just because they were born into a Protestant family, that they were.
I think they were a favourite. You know, the north of them, the south, of course, a lot.
Is it because they got the jobs and the Catholics didn't?
I think so. Maybe that may have been it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, we had no problem. Like, we had our businesses in the Ballyconnell in the south.
Yeah, both customers.
Both customers and very good friends of my husband's. And we had great neighbours and great friends there.
Yep.
Three or four different families living beside us, and they were absolutely great.
And having your house right on the border, was there a bit of smuggling going on?
Definitely, yeah. On the QT. No harm, no sin.
You didn't confess that to this man over here.
No, my husband didn't around like that a little bit.
No, I wouldn't have heard of them. No, I wouldn't have seen them personally. I suppose they used to be shooting over the Rag River, and I used to hear them talking about that. They'd be shooting at the British Army, they'd be the Republicans, yeah. Sinn Féin or IRA people would be shooting over at them, all right. But I never had to, I was never called to that kind of a tragedy, you know.
Somebody who was injured that needed the last rites?
No, I never was called to that, no. It was nearly always people on the other side of the border that happened. It wasn't,
yeah,
for Manna, there was...
Manna, yes, it was happening.
But wait, did you support the provos and the movement and the would you have been
no, supporter? We would have all, I mean, if insofar as we said anything, we would always have tried to call people to peace and to reconciliation, you know. I mean, while you might have Republican views, I mean, you just couldn't justify murdering people or that kind of thing. Or, you know, we didn't see the physical force thing as being the right way to proceed.
That
would be generally the church's view, like, regardless of what people's political views were, priests' political views.
Many Catholics would say that the Protestants had the better farms and land. Not in every case, because I know some Protestants down along the Brackley Road who had small enough farms and land, you know what I mean? But in other places, the Protestants would have better farms and better land. I suppose the inheritance.
We'll go back to
plantation times.
Plantation of Ulster.
You know, well, they would have got the better land, you know.
And so was there a bit of jealousy?
I suppose there would be. I suppose you'd have to go at that.
Certainly there can be a little bit of needle when places come up for sale. And some I would know, actually, they're quite friendly and I work for some of them, but... there is a thing about land is a big issue in Ireland. You don't have to be either Catholic or Protestant. You know the issue that land. But I know that certainly a little bit of sectarianism and a little bit of needle could come in where there would be certain farms for sale. It might be the greed or the greed for the hunger for this piece of land it might be there anywhere.
But people in the north would say that there was ethnic cleansing going on down here on the borderlands, and that they were trying to get rid of Protestant families.
That theory was floated some years back, I don't know now.
I wouldn't buy it at all.
But it happened. It did happen.
It may have happened, but when you put it this way, I suppose in the border, now I can't say it so much for the south, but in the border areas, I suppose the unions were the majority. History dictated that most, not all, but most Protestants would adhere to unionism. I know Protestants, and particularly I would have known a few Protestants who were Republicans. Not too many, but I would have known them, and they would be as good as Republicans as I am. But put it this way, I suppose the North was so close that when in the 40s and 50s things were economically tight here and people were leaving, some went to England, America, but Protestants had the option of going north. A lot of families would have moved north, particularly in the 50s and 60s. A lot of them moved maybe to Fermanagh to Road. Now, a classic example is the people who owned the house where I live, they were a Protestant family, very Protestant unionist. Prominent unionist family here in the early years of the century. They bought that place in the 1930s, lived in it for about 10 years. The father died, there were three daughters. One of them married a local man. The other two sisters married two brothers from County Tyrone, from Fintana and Thillick, that area. And they moved north. And my uncle...
Jemison, was that the name?
Jemison's, yes. And Jemison's... One of the McGee sisters married a man from Donboy. Kieran might have known him, I don't know. James McGovern would have known him. He was John Brown. I think John, wasn't that his name? John Brown,
yeah.
And John moved north. Probably under the
50s.
Probably the reckoned people that know him said that he was more or less persuaded by Walter Jemison to move. Now, I didn't know the Jemisons, but my mother knew them. She lived next door. She knew them. She was very friendly with them. And time moved on, and they moved north. And in January 1974, I think, Josie Jemison or Josie McGee lost the son. We just finished the Jemison story, and this is the tragedy of the whole thing. Josie McGee or Josie Jemison, she had a son killed, the UDR man. There was a lot of tit for tat sectarian killings in the north, and this guy Robert Jemison, he was the UDR man, he was killed. Now, it came on the radio, my mother heard it, and straight away she knew it was Josie's daughter. Or Josie's son was killed.
Why was he targeted?
He was EDR man.
He was part-time
EDR? EDR, yeah. And now, my mother wasn't very pleased. She'd be a Republican. And...
But were they driven from their land here?
No, they weren't driven. They married. They married northerners and decided to move north. Years later, my uncle, a brother of the man who was shot, met Josie McGee. She used to come up regularly to visit the family plot. Now, John didn't know anything about Robert Jemison being shot. And Josie said to him, "We had lots of troubles since we met last. Now, his brother had been killed in 58, James. Robert had been killed well over a decade later, in 74. And she says, we have lots of troubles since." And funny enough, John didn't know about Robert Jemison, although it was quite well known that he was around here, who he was and what happened. But John hadn't heard it. And the words that Josie used was, "The biggest mistake we ever did was leave Clonairy." So they didn't leave under any duress. They left of their own volition. And I would know of another family who left in the early 70s and moved north. And they weren't happy, and they weren't accepted, and they were...
They were not accepted in the north.
They weren't accepted in the north, no. They were Bruins.
And who were they?
Well, I prefer not to mention names, but...
Yeah.
But they left... And there was certainly no, they were always treated with respect and nobody ever bothered them. But they decided maybe, the old man certainly was the old type, and he didn't believe in the old type Protestant, old type Irishman, no time for humanism, things like that. When he did move north, he wasn't happy with the Church of Ireland in the position on humanism, and he joined what they called an Independent Methodist Church, who was generally Protestant churches. And they fall out, they set up their own little churches. There's rafts of churches. There's so many different types of Presbyterians that you lose track of them, you know. You have mainstream, you have moderate, you have evangelicals, you have frees.
But surely they're entitled to their own tradition.
Oh, they're entitled to their own tradition. Yeah. They're entitled to their own tradition, not saying that, but there was certainly no, there was certainly never any pressure put on them by anybody. They were treated with respect. Matter of fact, during the 50s, the ironic thing about it was that there were Protestants from the south who went north at weekends to work with the Beast Specials. And it was well known as well. And they'd come back up, and they'd be... I know one man, he's a Presbyterian man, he died recently. And he was... Now, there was allegations he was a Beast Special. I don't know whether he was or not. He was a very independent man. He was his own man. If he was a Beast Special, he joined it because he thought he should have joined it, rather than because he had to join it. But he was certainly very friendly with my uncle, and they were both in the agricultural business, and they put lots of work each other's way in the 50s. And he just mentioned it to me briefly before he died, in the course of a general conversation, which I didn't tease out too much. When we'd be in mixed company, particularly prior to the ceasefire, nobody had mentioned religion, politics. We just out of respect and deference over it, because... but I certainly would notice that when the talk started on the ceasefire, there was a great opening up on both sides, and they were quite prepared to sit down and talk about it. And another than Father John might be able to... if you were talking to somebody... You generally didn't refer to, oh, you're a Protestant, oh, you're a Church of Ireland. You know, it was regarded maybe as a bit obscene to call him, and I'm not saying obscene, but you're a Church of Ireland. And he mightn't be, he could be Presbyterian, but he wasn't a Catholic, put it that way.
Yeah.
But nowadays, we can sit down and talk about, I know that...
We can indeed, and you know...
We can sit down and talk, and there's no problem, certainly, at this side of the border in discussing, and we have good relationships. We're blessed with, particularly, we would have had, I'm sure Father John can agree with me, we would have a couple of Protestant ministers here, the Church of Ireland ministers, and they were open. The first Protestant minister ever I met, he was a Corkman, he was George Kingston, he was a rector of Swindon Bar. I thought he was a priest, the first time I saw him, he arrived at ours. But there's one thing striking about him. He was wearing the collar, not unlike what Father John would wear, and the black, the black thing that you...
The stock.
A stock. And the trousers, but he had the nicest sports coat ever I saw in a man. I'm sure he'd have...
Did you know him, John?
Yes. He
was an Australian as time.
He was in Killeshandra as well,
The
reason he had a good sports coat was because his son had a draper shop and then a skilling at church.
I could tell you quite a humorous story about Reverend Kingston. He was a rare man, but I won't mention names with the name of the other clergyman, but
a classic
example of I suppose being from the south. And I certainly know there are a lot of Kingstons in County Cork. He was in Cork. A lot of them are Protestants. There was a guy called Sam Kingston, an ARA man, in the 20s. I don't know what religion he was. He was mentioned. I had heard of Kingston, a Republican called Sam Kingston in Cork. Now, whether they were any relatives or not, but Kingston's quite a common name down there. George Kingston was doing locum. There was a new minister here a few years ago, and an elderly lady... Protestant lady died over the way here, and my mother and a local woman were going up to pay their respects in the house to this Protestant woman's family, and this guy came along, and it was Reverend Kingston, and he asked him, he says, assume you're going up to the funeral house, and he introduced himself, But they had known him from his previous stint right back here. And he says that any of you know Father such and such, I won't mention the man's name because he's he says, I work with him in Australia.
You work in what?
I work in Australia. But apparently this man was a little bit fond of liquor and he did come back home. And shortly afterwards, Kingston was sent back or came back to Ireland and his first minister was in Kilishandra. And he got out of a taxi. He got a taxi from Caffin and was standing with his two arms down, so the one of them, even well, he didn't even know where the church was in Kilishandra, when this voice boomed out of the local hostelry. Maybe it could have been fair. What the hell are you doing here, Kingston? And it was his Catholic counterpart, there were chaplains in the one school.
Oh, good way.
And he says, I put in a rough evening, he says, and maybe he says, I'm going to the next day. He says, it wasn't a great start to be ministering to the son.
But before I go, John, just again, it's important that I establish your background, because you say that you grew up here locally as well.
In Kilishandra, yeah. In Kenmare.
Yeah, and so you were... your background, your father, was he in the farming business or was he a farmer?
He was, yeah, a farmer and a publican.
And he was a county footballer. And he was
he was a staunch Republican too, was he?
No, he wasn't, no. His half-brother was fought in the War of Independence. But he sided with Michael Collins.
He became a stater, in other words.
Yes, yeah. And he was in the Free State Army.
Yeah. And what was his name?
He was John P. Murphy.
Yeah. And so policing would be a background there. You know, did he continue in the army?
Or? He did. He died he was the OC in Limerick when he died, and.
Oh, was he? So, yeah. And it remained on for quite a while.
Yeah, he died in 1952.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you, when you were appointed to this area as a priest, you were kind of coming back to your own area, weren't you?
Yeah, well, normally that's what happens with us, if you're ordained for your diocese, you stay in it. Tony O'Keefe would be a first cousin of yours, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He was a year behind me. In
that's Madrid. Amazing. I can't believe that. That's how small the country is, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Father was a famous county footballer.
He might have even faced
Gerryman.
Oh, probably did. But John, so you escaped, the troubles as such. I mean, you were here for that bombing in Ballyturbin.
Well, I was still in the seminary at that time.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was ordained
in
73.
That was 1972. Yeah.
Three, wasn't it?
I think it was 72, the bombing.
Was it? Yeah.
I think
right.
And then you went off to England. So you were over there for quite a while.
For 4 years, yeah.
And then you came back here.
Came back to Leitrim.
Yeah. And but Leitrim was kind of a background for republicanism, really. Wasn't it?
There were some parts of it. Now, where I was, there wasn't. There was people weren't political in that way.
Yeah,
there were very few in the parish I was in. Mm-hmm. Whereas next door was in Dunkirin, and there was quite a few republicans there.
But Kieran, you would have had the same. I mean, Your background is Republican. I mean, you were telling me you're a nationalist, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway...
The Maguires, definitely. Am I wrong, or...?
I think you're wrong now, too.
Yeah. Maybe I'm getting my information wrong, I don't know.
But anyway...
You grew up in... So did you...
You'd be sympathetic at times to the Republican view. You take the Republican view at times over various events in the North, like Bloody Sunday and internment and different things like that, you know. But then at other times there would be horrific bombings and innocents killed. You get it hard to support a lot of that too, you know.
And when you saw
when bombs were let off and innocents killed, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
And when Bobby Sands died, I mean, there was a lot of.
That created a wave of. He got elected in this constituency then as a DD, I suppose, in a wave of that's right. We voted for him, and would have voted him for himself, I suppose, definitely at the time. But then that doesn't mean you stand over everything that happens. You know.
But did your outlook? Did your mind come to terms with the continuous? Conflict that was continuing.
I would have favoured them stopping it and stopping the whole campaign making some kind of a settlement, you know, and because you could see that it wasn't really going anywhere, and in the last few years. It's only my personal opinion now, nobody else's, but the IRA and the Republican movement in general down the north was riddled with informers. You had Dennis Donaldson, he was in the, well, if he wasn't, we'd say, on the same level as McGuinness and Adams, but he certainly was just one step below them, and he was a double agent. And Jerry Adams was a car driver for a number of years. He was a double agent. It was unbelievable. And several more, you had Scappaticci, they call him Steak Knife. He was going around killing IRA fellas for alleged IRA offences. And I'd say some of them could have been prompted by the British establishment. It could have been, you know, that I'd say there were innocent IRA men killed, wiped out just because this is an opportunity, and they had the man to do it. Because in the very latter end, I would have thought that that one of the main reasons why Adams and other people that I wouldn't know so much about, I wouldn't know hardly anything about them, would have agreed to a ceasefire and peace terms was that the writing was on the wall, that they had the weapons, they still had stores and stores of weapons from Gaddafi hidden away, and all that. They didn't have the personnel to use them. Not really. That's my only opinion. I could be wrong, as could be, but I think that there was shock and distrust. There's been an awful lot of people who just couldn't.
Within the organisation?
Yes, within the organisation. I'd say that there must have been shock and distrust. Maybe I'm reading it all wrong, but I don't think. I believe there were, that there must have been ferocious distrust. I mean, I heard sympathisers up in Corlow, it's not to say here, only a few men away, they wouldn't even trust McGuinness and Adams in the latter end. They suspected they could nearly be informers too. It was gone to that pitch.
And was that the case?
That's not the only person being. So that's why I'd say that's why there was peace. Because apart from that, there would have been an element in the IRA who would never make peace. But I'd say it was forced on them by the majority of them. Any of them that had thinking minds, and sure, everyone has a thinking mind when it comes down to it, that the writing was on the wall, that they saw the writing on the wall. But that's my own theory. I don't have any inside information or anything like that. You know what I mean? But that's where that distrust, the British had infiltrated to an awful extent.
Yeah, and so Oliver, did you experience that? Looking over your shoulder all the time. Is that true?
Well, I was fortunate. I at one stage we were all told about look over shoulders, be very careful. This is coming on towards the approaching the ceasefire. There was a lot of infiltration. I don't know whether it was UVF or. Certainly British inspired, I believe, but to get back to Kieran's point, there certainly was a high level of, but that was the name of the game. The IRA also had a pretty good intelligence network as well, surprisingly good, but of course the British were always masters of it. How much it had, much bearing it had on the how much bearing it had on the ceasefire, it might have had a bearing, but I think it reached checkmate, stalemate. they could have been going on even yet with attacks, but it was going nowhere. They had fought each other to a standstill. The fact that the British were half interested in talking, and some of them were conservative governments, and the fact that Mrs. Thatcher, despite all the detestation of Republicans, she was using the back door. We know that. There's all the back channels. But I'd say probably one of the... There was... You see, the one thing that I would have learned, and this would be a personal level, and I think the movement would have learned it as well, if you're overly dogmatic, to quote Harold Wilson, you never say never in politics, but Irish people and Irish Republicans are always good at saying never. So are the unionists. Never, never, never. But that's, I think, and I certainly would credit most of it. Gerry Adams, he's a man, he's a very, I would know him, but when I say I know him, I know him as well as anybody could know him. He's a very, he's a great strategist, great backroom man, not particularly brilliant in the public domain, and certainly he's not designed for TV or even radio, but at the backroom level, when it comes to sitting down and discussing tactics on a private level, he is, particularly political tactics. But the key man there was Martin McGuinness, and Martin McGuinness's loss to the peace process is because Martin McGuinness was just the person who could stretch right across. I never thought I would see the day when I see Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley best buddies and the Paisley family.
Yeah.
If that could be repeated.
Well, can I ask you, Oliver, were you happy to see the Good Friday Agreement?
Yes, I was.
Would you have preferred to?
No. I was happy to see certainly sitting down and trying to sort this thing out. I know it's run into a logjam at the moment. And I will admit that Republicans are probably in some degrees as responsible as the others.
Yeah, Michelle O'Neill is the other. That's the good raise.
But just
there tends to be. But then Arlene Foster is.
I know
she's certainly.
But the other question
the
I have.
The Nita McGuinness.
The Nita McGuinness, but they haven't. And along. And Michelle O'Neill, I don't think has the experience. She's a young woman. She hasn't experienced.
But the other question I have for you is, do you see the Republicans of the recent violence similar to those of the Republicans in the 1916-23 violence?
I would, very much so. There's no popular mandate for 1916, but I'd say that what goaded them into it, yeah, not in Dublin particularly, in the 1913 lockout, which was where you really saw the... I suppose there was a, although left-right politics isn't a big issue here,
yeah,
not in the standard sense, it's there. I'd say what prompted them to raise the fact that they thought to be a more merged uprising than actually was, miscalculated, I'd say. I don't think that's what I think in 1916.
Okay.
And it backfired.
Okay.
And then the British reaction, you see, the British, like, sometimes we make, and as Republicans, sometimes we've done stupid things, but the British are equally capable of doing stupid things too. And one thing led to another. But I suppose to get back to the present troubles, once things got out of hand in 1969, it's like two neighbours fighting over a patch of ground. And once the snarling and the snapping starts, and then when it comes to fisticuffs, and it gets worse, and the snowball effect, until it just goes beyond reconciliation. If people sit down, if you let emotion run away with you, and we all lose our tempers. One thing I've learned over the last number of years is, if you lose your temper, you lose the argument. But when they were battered off the streets in 69, and when the internment and everything else, you see, unions weren't supreme. Unionism didn't think, it was such a monolith, they didn't think they could be beaten. And the one thing that, it mightn't politically long term be a good thing, but the unionist monolith was shattered. the big house unions and the Brute Brothers, those, they are gone by the wayside. The official unions party is taken behind, way behind the DUP. Now, the DUP have some rather rare individuals in their ranks. Now, their attitudes to a lot of things are so off the wall, like even in religious terms. And I don't believe in mixing religion and politics.
But are you saying to me so that but if you scratch the surface that the troubles are still there? Is that what you're saying?
I certainly not from the Republican point of view. Those Republicans, and I would have known some of them who broke away in, particularly Rory Brady, I knew quite well. I knew him reasonably well, and his followers. But it was democratically, you mightn't, it was decided at the North East that they would take our seats and that we would move a certain way. They didn't like that, and they walked away. And then they rose amongst themselves, and these dissidents, some of them might be motivated by genuine reasons, but the vast majority of them, you hear in Dublin now with these dissidents, they're just criminals. There were people who creamed off, who used the system over the years and made well of it. And they are motivated. Most of these so-called dissidents, they're not even politically motivated.
So, Oliver, do you think that you were a victim of the violence?
No, not particularly. I don't feel a victim.
But you well, think I you came out okay?
Well, I wasn't caught anyway, put it that way. I don't feel I'm a victim. I know the people who were victims. I would have known people from both sides of the divide who were killed. I don't gloat on any man's death, and I certainly think there were. But I think that we have to, we have to. I suppose the onus is on us. And after all, if you take nationalism, republicanism, we are in the majority of the island. We have to try to persuade Protestants that we don't. We don't intend to. No.
So if there was an RUC man that is sitting there, would you shake hands with him?
I have no problem with shaking hands with him.
Yeah.
Now, I might have shaken hands with him 20 years ago. He might have shaken hands with me. He might have got me with a scruff of the neck. But but personally, I would have...
Okay.
I found an occasional RUC man who was okay and a good cop.
Yeah.
But I'm
going to have to stop it there, but Oliver Brady, I'm going to come back again. I really want to sit down and talk to you more. And John, thank you for coming in as well. That's great. And Kieran, for bringing all this together and for making it happen. Thank you indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm talking to Kathleen McManus. Kathleen, where did you grow up?
I grew up into Tubberline in Ballycon, where I still live. For the last 60-odd years. I never moved. But I married and we built a house on my father's land where I live now.
And so tell me about your background then, and the connection with our great golfer, of course, McIlroy.
Well, my mother was Bannon from the next town land, and she married a man by the name of Kelleher, which is my father. And then her brother went to Belfast, and then he went to New York, but he came back and he married a lady down there. And their son is Rory McIlroy's trainer. He's called Michael Bannon.
He still is,
and
isn't he?
Still is, yeah, living in County Down. And he still is, and we hope he can continue.
And great support down here for him, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't know if many people know that, really, but Mike, the Bannon name, but his cousins would know it. He's a lot of cousins up here and that he'd know it.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's how it is. Yeah. But tell me now, so you grew up into a farming background,
I grew up, my mother went to Belfast in the 40s, was there at the time of the war and all that. And
where did she work?
She worked with a doctor in the Falls Road, Belfast. In fact, she worked with a couple of doctors, but I don't really know, much about it. I did see references for that. But she came back home, but I think it was a match with her and my late father. Both of them are dead now, but they married in the 9th of February 1948, they married, which is my birthday, but not that day, but that's the day they married, 1948. So they were in their 30s, both of them, and She married into the house with three men, her husband, his brother, and his father. And she used to say there was hardly a knife or fork in the house. But anyway, she was a terrific woman, and she had 10 pregnancies, and there was 7 of us lived. So she reared us all on very little, with small farm and that. They were good parents. My uncle Stephen, that lived with us, he used to babysit us and all that, to let her go to town on our bicycle. And my grandfather died, and I don't know about him. He died in 1952, I think it was, he died in. So we had a great, very great upbringing. We never went hungry or anything like that. We really had a good upbringing. But her mother was Curry from the Halla, which is just below the Fermanagh border, which was probably a match with her and her husband, which was called, he was Mick Bannon. And she came up, and they lived in the next town land, us. And Mammy used to say she was a terrific woman. She came from the Nopper, she was a terrific lady. Now, of Mammy's family, her own family, there was 8 of them. And 3 of her family died when they were in the 30s. Two of them of cancer, and one of them of the heart. And one of them lived till they were over 90.
Imagine that.
So, yeah. But another thing is too, my aunt, she was the oldest in the family, and she went to America. She came back, and she married a Reynolds man. He was a guard. He was in Ballyconnell, and they went to live they lived in different places around the country, but they resigned in Lanesborough. And I don't know whether many people remember the trouble there was with Father Reynolds there, and that he was supposed to have a child to some lady out in Kenya. Well, that Father Reynolds is a first cousin of mine.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. He was my aunt's son, and he was in Kenya. So this just happened a few years ago.
And so there was a lot
That Father Reynolds and Michael Bannon are first cousins too.
Yeah, yeah. So and Father Reynolds, of course, was wrongly...
He was wrongly accused, yeah.
Yeah.
He was, and he fought. And he won his case. I knew well he was not guilty.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from knowing his mother, he wouldn't have done it on his mother.
Yeah.
But it was the night he went out. He went out on a Monday night. We didn't know what kind of it was going to go out on the television. But, you know what I mean, people said, God, I couldn't believe it. You know, the police got such a bad name. But he had to leave right away.
Yeah.
He had to leave. He was over in Ahasra in County Galway. They approached him coming out of when he used to have to give him Holy Communion.
That's what Casey was, wasn't it?
Was that what he was too? Yeah, yeah, he was in Galway too. But yes. They approached him coming out after doing First Holy Communion.
Yeah.
In this church, and they had filmed him that day in the church doing First Holy Communion. But he had to leave right away. But thank God he's back there now.
Yeah. Now, in fact, the you were living right on the border here.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And you live right. 30 years of the Troubles as well.
Yes, yeah. Yes, all my life, yeah.
Yeah, and so, did you experience any harassment or difficulties or...
Not really.
Intimidation or...
Not really, you know, in our house and all that, or in our home place. Only when you'd be going down to the bar, we go down to Enniskillen to shop and that, and you'd have to pass through the army checkpoint, you could be held up for a half an hour at the army checkpoint. Especially if there's a funeral in Derry Lynn or anything, they'd know there's a funeral, so they'd make sure wouldn't get there in time.
Imagine.
And just different things like that. You just had that fear of going by them, just the fear of... I remember when I worked in a textile factory in Ballinamore, and we had to go down for a course to Enniskillen one night, and one of the men that was with us had got the car off his father to bring us down. It was 4 or 5 of us. So we were stopped on the way home that night. And so we were young people, you know what I mean, in our 20s, early 20s, I'm sure we weren't. But they brought us all to different parts of the road and questioned us all, what we were doing and what we were out. So afterwards we realised we could have been shot.
Of course.
But we all had the same story. We all were coming from a course we were doing to do with work. was my, it was the only experience I ever met of meeting the, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know who they were, you know, these people that stopped us.
Tell me about your brother. He joined the RUC?
That was a cousin of my mother's.
Tell me about him.
He went down to Belfast, and I don't know what years he would have been in, the supposed to 20s or 30s, and he joined the RUC. And he used to come home here. He had two brothers living in Coolyoke beside my mother's home place, and he used to come home and visit there. And on one occasion he was visited, to someone visited that night, but he wasn't actually in the house that night. There was someone coming to get him.
To shoot him?
Yeah.
What was his name?
He was Patrick Fox, and he married a lady from Portadown. And my mother used to say she was a Protestant. Now, I'm not sure whether she was or not. He had four children. One of them is still alive. Though he had two sons and two daughters. They always came to visit us, and they always kept in touch with us. Now, one of them is still alive down there, but she'd be in her 80s now.
Yeah.
So he would have relations down there still.
And so Patrick Fox, is he still alive?
Patrick's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick would be like, he'd be over 100 now. He'd been a cousin of my mother's, a first cousin of my mother. So my mother was born in 1915, so you think.
Oh, okay. So he was a member of the RUC. What year or so then? That would have been in the...
I suppose in the 30s, would it be?
Yeah, it would have been very early.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even then, there was trouble.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you see, coming back up here, it was only my mother used to tell us that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wouldn't have remembered that. In the later years, she used to come and visit us, but when he had left, you know, when he had retired and that.
Yeah.
But she used to tell us these stories. But
and so would you consider your house then to be a Republican house or, you know, sympathisers with the Republicans or...?
No, we were... My father was the Fine Gael man, Fine Gael house, the Fine Gael house really, but we didn't know, you know what I mean? So it meant nothing to us.
Yeah.
You know, he had nothing to do with politics or nothing to do with anything. You know what I mean? Just that's what they were and they followed on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was nothing. But my mother was in Belfast, you see, and she was walking down, her and her brother Sean, which is Michael Bannon's father, was walking down the Falls Road one day and they met these ones and they said, look at the two Fenians. And why was that? She said they had two pioneer pins.
And that's what gave them away.
That's what she said, anyhow. So she often told us that story.
Yeah.
So that was it. But that was the connection, anyway, with the North.
Yeah, and so there was... it's extraordinary. Would you say that the tension now is still there? Do you think there are people who still look at people and, you know, are conscious of the fact that, you know, that they were...
I think
it's all died away now?
Yeah, well... I know a lot. See, my husband worked for Sean Quinn, Tovaloy for Sean Quinn for 34 years, so he was working north and south.
Yeah.
So we really didn't really pass much remarks once the army went and the border was open.
Yeah.
We all, you know, were all mixed up.
Did they give that factory a hard time? I mean, during the Troubles, was there a difficulty with trucks moving in and out and...
No, but they'd done mostly up here, you see. But they'd have to go by the army, you see.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But they never, can't really remember, they never really said much, you know what I mean. No, it was, they're not really, you know, they're up and down, they're even up, they'd be up the north and down the south, to be every place.
Yeah.
I would say Sean Quinn had his own, you know, his own, he knew them well and he got on well with them, I'd say Sean himself. No, you know what I mean, he didn't have anything, you know. I never really remember them saying that, and then he had much trouble with them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and would you still see the border as a place, you know, another country going north then, or is that something that...
You wouldn't really know where the border was now, you say.
Yeah.
I know exactly what it is, all right, but there was one house in the border, and they said that there was the kitchen in the south and the the bedroom was in the north. There was a house down there that used to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, some man used to come here to the centre and he says he lived on the board and he said his house was in the centre, but I hang my clothes out in the north to dry because his garden was in the north.
Imagine that. Yeah. Yeah.
Used to say that story.
So you're all so close to the border.
Yeah, right, I wouldn't, you know what I mean? I have cousins down there in Derlin and places like that that I wouldn't, you know what I mean? I wouldn't pass a bit of remarks going down there now. I go down to Enniskillen regular.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I like Enniskillen to shop in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It'd be an awful pity if anything happened that border would come back.
Yeah.
It would be terrible. Terrible for us, you know, people in Ballyconnell area and that. You know what I mean? Even for the people down in Fermanagh or Derrylin or Timosha, they love coming up to Ballyconnell. Is their town safe for socialising in even?
Tis, of course, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But so it's important to get all these stories together. Yeah, though, sure.
Even when Aha Lane Bridge, you know, it was, you maybe heard about it.
Yeah.
And for years and years, people had to come into Ballyconnell and go to Baltorbet that way. And now they can come straight from Berlin to Baltorbet. And that, you know, if that happens there, that bridge was blown up, you see, years ago.
And it caused a lot of...
Yeah.
You know, they had to go all the way around then, yes. You know, so it was...
Yeah, and then the televisions and that used to be cheaper in the north and things like that, and people used to be trying to smuggle them up or bring them across a river or something like that. But in the 70s or 80s now, when I would have got married, the things were a lot cheaper, them things down the north, and now it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would have been, I went a bit of that smuggling going on, yeah. Different things, but...
But sure, that was a whole
nothing
way
very, very minor. Nothing to be... Yeah,
Kathleen,
that's it.
Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, please, no problem, yeah. Thank you.